SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome to The Secrets of the Hobbit, episode 7 of our podcast, in which we talk about Tolkien, about the books, but of course, all the excitement now is about the two movies that have started production. Officially, filming has started in New Zealand. We are super excited about it, and when I say we, I mean me, Father Roderick, the host of this show, and my co-host, Dave Kale, in California. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. Super excited.
It is on. It started. And I can tell, actually, that there is a lot of excitement around The Hobbit because all of a sudden, our podcast audience has more than doubled, almost tripled. So welcome to all our new listeners. We hope that you enjoy this show. What are we doing this show, Dave?
Well, we talk about the films. We talk about current news, any updates we hear from the production or the actors' blogs and various things. And then we speculate about how the book might be translated onto the screen. And we talk about the background of the story in the books and Tolkien and everything.
Yeah,
if you're a Tolkien fan, you must listen to this podcast.
It's much more than just the latest news, because of course you can find that all over the web, and there is this excellent Hobbit in 5 YouTube series that is that's produced by theonering.net, and but what we try to do is also to provide you with some background information. At least that's why I have Dave on the show, because he is a Tolkien expert. I'm just a fan, but I don't know that much. But I love The Hobbit. I love Tolkien, and I'm always eager to learn. So I will play the role of the not very knowledgeable Tolkien fan, and Dave is playing the role of the Tolkien expert slash professor slash, well, there's only one Tolkien professor, but Dave. Dave is definitely in that same league, at least to me. Well, let's jump straight into the news. Of course, the biggest news of today is that, or of this week, is that filming has started. Production has started on March 20th. That was a Sunday. That was a bit surprising to me. Why do they start filming on Sunday? You'd think they'd start on Monday.
Yeah, it's a little odd.
Well, there you go. Expert opinion.
I don't know.
It's odd. No, it must be a New Zealand thing. I don't know.
maybe they were hoping there would be less hoopla and less of media circus if they started on Sunday.
Could be. I have no idea. Or it might have even been weather related, or who knows. Well, of course, not just the internet, but all the media are buzzing about the start of production. And it was funny to listen to a couple of my favorite podcasts, even, you know, not Tolkien podcasts or anything, but just a regular computer techie podcast. And they all picked up on the beginning of filming. And it was interesting to hear the reactions of the people on various panels. I was listening to a Buzz Out Loud, which is a tech podcast, and they had this as a news item. And then most of the co-hosts were reacting like, wait a minute, The Hobbit, for real? Are they going to start filming that? Is that movie still going to be made? And they were totally oblivious of the fact that this production was about to happen. And so if that reflects the overall opinion or the general public, then I think we are yet to see the a lot of excitement worldwide, because I don't think that a lot of people know that these two movies are coming. Of course, I'm not talking about the Tolkien fans and fans of Peter Jackson. They all know that this is coming, but the general public probably is not that much aware. And we've been following the news for a couple of weeks now, about 6-7 weeks since we started this podcast. And the funny thing is, media always need pictures. And if an article doesn't have a photo or a picture, then it usually does not get much space, or it's somewhere, you know, on page 20 of the newspaper or somewhere hidden on a website. But now that production has started, we've seen the first pictures, and that is immediately resulting in a lot more exposure in general media. And so the first two pictures that were posted, actually I saw three pictures. All of the three feature Peter Jackson on the set of Bag End. In one photo was published in an article in the Dominion Post. It was a big photo where Peter Jackson is photographed it at the, you know, in the main entrance hall of Bag End. The door is open. In the background, you see Matamata, which is the location in New Zealand where the Shire was filmed for the Lord of the Rings trilogy. It's also where you've got the hill with all the hobbit holes. So you see that in the background. However, according to what I've heard, that was actually a fake backdrop. So that's, I don't know if they photoshopped it in or whether it's some projection outside of the thing. But the actual set where they started to film last Sunday was not in Matamata. They started filming in Miramar. And so the entire Bag End set, the outside of the set is in Matamata, and the inside, the interior of the set is in Miramar. And so they had to kind of fake the outside. I mean, this is probably not even, you know, outside, or certainly not outside. This is just on a soundstage. So this whole interior hobbit hole is built in a studio because, of course, you want to be able to film there even when it's raining, and of course, autumn and winter is coming up soon. So you don't want those sets to be outside in nasty weather. So if you see those pictures, or that one picture of Bilbo's home with the open door, the background is fake. But it was a really nice picture, very beautiful, and very interesting. It is, of course, one of the two sets that exist of Bilbo's house. Because if you've seen the extras on the DVD, the special edition DVDs, they show you that they built Bilbo's home in two sizes, because of course they try to do all the special effects mostly in camera, and so in order to create the illusion that the actor playing Bilbo is really tiny, they have to size up the set, and so there is a version of Bag End that is huge, really big, and that's actually what you see, because Peter Jackson is standing straight in front of the door, and his head, the top of his head, doesn't even hit the upper side of the door, and so that is certainly the set that is going to make Bilbo look really tiny, or the actor that plays Bilbo really small. And then they've got a duplicate home, another version of Bag End, where everything is very small, and that, of course, is to make. Or actually, I think that would be a real size, a realistic hobbit hole. So that would be life size, where Ian McKellen, who plays Gandalf, when he enters that set, everything looks cramped and small so that he looks huge and tall and just like a regular human being. And so what they did in The Lord of the Rings was to alternate between these two sets. And it's very interesting to see that, you know, one part of the scene, you know, one phrase might be filmed in the small set, and then Bilbo's response would be filmed in the big set, and you have no idea. There's no way that you can tell that this was filmed on different days, sometimes even different years. Unbelievable. Sometimes there are months or years between the two scenes that just seamlessly work together to create the illusion that Gandalf is this huge wizard and Bilbo is this tiny little man. And I think it's a much better solution than to do this with computer effects, where they could just film Bilbo in front of a green screen and then shrink him with a computer. But I don't think it would have the same effect. You would not get this. What I liked about The Lord of the Rings approach was that it just feels really natural. You really feel that Bilbo is there. He can interact with the objects in his home. And it's very different from the CGI green screen method that perhaps George Lucas would use. So it was cool to see him in that interior set in Miramar. There were two other photos that were released on the new Facebook page of Peter Jackson. So Peter Jackson apparently now has his own personal Facebook page. Did you take a look at the page?
Yeah, I was taking a look at it. He's got 45,000 followers already.
Holy moly. And that's just since, what, 2-3 days?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, there's another picture there. His profile picture is actually him standing there in at the front porch of Beg End. And mm-hmm. there were some other pictures there, right?
I think there's one of him seated inside of Beg End in what looks like either no, that's not the kitchen. That must be like a pantry or something. But there's, it could be the kitchen. There's the fireplace in the background and shelves with lots of jars of food and like cooking utensils hanging on the wall and a head of lettuce in the background.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, this is the part of the set where, Bilbo has this talk where Gandalf is welcomed in his home and he's preparing tea and some cookies and everything. And Gandalf mm-hmm. is sitting at a table. And at that time, I think, isn't that what his family tries to tries to get in contact with Bilbo? And he's all, I don't want to see them. And
you mean from Fellowship of the Ring?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those early scenes.
And I presume this is also the same place where they'll do the scenes when Gandalf and then the dwarves start showing up and harassing Bilbo in The Hobbit.
Oh, certainly. Because, of course, when they show up, Bilbo first thinks that it's Gandalf and knocking on his door because he doesn't know that Gandalf has made this sign on his front door, yep. His secret sign, and then it's one dwarf after another that comes in, and he immediately steps into the same role as what we've seen at the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring, where he needs to provide food and beverages, and that's what he does. So I think that we can see a lot of running around in the kitchen. This time, it's not just going to be Gandalf in there, but it's also going to be all the dwarfs. So that is most certainly going to happen in the big set, because, of course, all the dwarfs are full-grown actors as well, and they have to look tiny. So, and then I wonder, by the way, if they need to do some trickery in when it comes to the height, the size difference between hobbits and dwarfs, because dwarfs, if I'm not mistaken, are a little bit taller than hobbits.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I think when you're doing the shooting with just Gandalf and, say, Bilbo, it's easy because you can just... Well, it's not easy. None of this is easy.
No.
I don't want anyone to think I thought this was easy. But that's easier because you have sort of two kinds of height. You either have really, really tall Gandalf or you have really, really short Bilbo. Here they have to do sort of gradations of height because I think the dwarves are a little taller than the hobbit. And then, of course, Gandalf is taller than the dwarves yet, so that should be an interesting challenge. On the other hand, I think a lot of the interior scenes are going to be with them seated, so maybe that'll make things a little easier.
Could be, yes. Although there might be some running around in the kitchen, because of course the dwarves are also starting to help Bilbo after he complains that he has to do everything himself, and then I think two of the dwarves are like, well, we can help. And so, I think it's going to be quite a choreography to make that all work, especially because it's going to be filmed in two sets. And I don't know if they're going to... They probably will use the other technique that they used in the Fellowship of the Ring, where when you have scenes, especially scenes taken from a distance, where you see Gandalf and hobbits, some of the hobbits are played by children, actually. And because it's... The camera is far away. You can't really tell that it's children dressed up as hobbits. So they use that technique as well to probably also to make it easier to have make sure that the whole thing is practical and doesn't require too much CGI post-production. What I really liked about the photo on the Facebook website is that you see Peter Jackson sitting there on the at the kitchen table with this Hobbit pipe, which, by the way, I think the pipes that they are smoking in the Fellowship of the Ring are actually smaller than the way that they're described in The Hobbit, because I was rereading the first chapter, and I think in the description it says that the pipes were almost as tall as a hobbit, so way bigger than the ones that we see in the movies. Quite impractical, though.
Yes.
And so Peter Jackson is sitting there with that pipe, and it is almost identical to a photo that was taken years ago when they first started shooting the Lord of the Rings trilogy. There's a photo of June 2001, and if you go over to theonering.net, for example, you will see those two photos juxtaposed, and it's very interesting. You see the old Peter Jackson, the kind of chubby hobbit-like Peter Jackson, sitting there in the same kitchen, also smoking a pipe. The pipe is a bit different. It's more curved, and it's a huge difference. You can tell that he's in so much better shape now than he was at the time.
Significantly less hobbit-like.
Yeah, definitely. He looks lean and mean. And the other thing that struck me when I saw those two pictures is that, and what makes it so interesting to see them next to each other, is that the photo that was taken in 2001, that this new one mimics, is taken in the small set. So you can tell that everything in the kitchen there is tiny and is a miniature version of the big set. And if you see them next to each other, you can easily tell for yourself that we're talking two different sized sets of exactly the same home. So that must require so much eye for detail to make everything perfect, because you don't want to have continuity problems where, you know, one apple might be in a different place in one shot, and then the next shot that apple is going to be somewhere else. You know, everything has to be extremely, you know, just a perfect copy of the other set. And I don't know how to do that with live stuff like, you know, like fruit and vegetables.
Well, especially how do they maintain if they're building two different size sets and everything has to be to scale? Do they have to have like abnormally large apples in one of the sets?
Well, yeah, exactly. Or probably just, you know, fake apples in one set and real ones in the other, or just fake altogether. I have no idea. But it's well, they have experience with this, so I'm pretty sure that we will not see the
apples moving around.
Yeah, exactly. Although that's almost impossible to avoid. There are always little mistakes, continuity errors in every movie that you see. And that, too, it makes it fun for fans to try to find them and try to compare, you know, you freeze frame through the movies to try to see the little, you know, mistakes that were made. And, you know, in this one scene, the Gloin's beard is a little bit frazzled, and in the other scene his beard is all straight and well cleaned. And you know, we'll get plenty of stuff like that later on. So Peter Jackson is up and running. He is raring to go, as they say a lot in these articles. Actually, they're all raring to go. And we don't know that much else about the first day of shooting, except that it happened in Bag End. There was an interesting article, as I already mentioned, in the Dominion Post about the differences between the first day of shooting of the Lord of the Rings trilogy and today's start of the Hobbit production. Back then, in 1999, no press conferences. There was almost nothing was known about the way that this movie would look and about the actors or anything. The only thing that they told later on was that the first thing they filmed was the scene where the hobbits were hiding under the roots of the tree with the Nazgul appearing. You know, it's that weird shot, which is, by the way, I was rewatching it the other day, and according to a lot of fans, there's a mistake. There's a CGI problem in that scene, because you see the horse with the Nazgul appearing on the left side of the tree. However, the rest of the horse is not there on the other side of the tree. But there is also a camera movement, so I'm still debating whether this was, you know, a true mistake and just the right side of the horse was just left out in the computer graphics, or whether it's part of the, I don't know, some kind of weird effect of the camera moving and panning up and then, you know, you just get the illusion that half of the horse is not there. But that apparently was the first thing that they filmed. And now we know that one of the first scenes they filmed last Sunday was inside Bag End, and so that has to be the encounter. You know, it has to do with Bilbo and the dwarves and Ian McKellen as well. Did McKellen blog about that first day of shooting? Did he update his blog or?
Nope, he hasn't said anything yet. So he must be just way too busy. Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully this isn't going to be the pattern, though. He blogs and blogs and blogs, and then they start filming, and we never hear from him again.
Well, anyway, we have some alternatives now, because not only has Peter Jackson now launched his own Facebook page, but there's also apparently the official Hobbit blog that has launched. And I'm trying to find it here. Here it is. It's the URL is www.thehobbitblog.com. And right now there's not much info there. There are four articles basically announcing what we've already talked about, that they started filming and that Peter Jackson now has a Facebook page. But it looks pretty. And what I liked is that they also give a nod to the fan community, because they included a link to the fifth episode, or was, I'm not sure what episode number this was, but to the Hobbit in 5 YouTube video. So that's pretty cool that it's not just kind of an official channel where they only, you know, kind of release super controlled information. One of the things that the production company has always been, I don't even know if this is the same production company. But one thing they did really well during the production of The Lord of the Rings was to communicate with the fans and involve the fan community in the excitement about the movie and letting that voice be heard, instead of seeing fans as just an annoying bunch of people that are trying to steal secrets from the set and, you know, are a potential liability and are copyright infringing, you know, annoying people. They realize they need the fans, because they are going to carry the excitement over this long period of production and post-production all the way up to the premiere. And the more you involve the fans, the more you get that community vibrant and alive around the movies, the more it will pay off at the box office. Which, of course, I have no doubt that the movie will do anyway. Even if they didn't do anything in terms of promotion, who doesn't want to see the Hobbit movies? Especially with that great legacy of the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Let's see what else was new. There was a blurb about Liv Tyler. She was asked about The Hobbit and whether, I guess this is totally what you said, was it last week or the week before, that now you will see a lot of articles where they're just going to call up everyone who has been somehow involved in the previous movies and ask them, are you going to be in the Hobbit? And they'll answer like,
yeah, when news is drying up, the media always finds a way to invent it.
Yeah. And so Liv was asked, so did you get a call? Are you going to go back to New Zealand? And apparently, no. She wasn't even aware that production was starting, which is a bit baffling. I mean, you would think that if you've been involved in this huge mega project, one of the biggest stepping stones of your career, although she already had, of course, a big career before that, but Lord of the Rings was an important role for her, that she would still continue to follow what was happening. And I mean, it's her profession, right, to be an actress. So she didn't get a call. She would, of course, like anyone, love to go back to New Zealand and be somehow involved, but I don't think that the chances are big. Even though, you know, since she plays an elf, I think theoretically that could happen, right?
Yeah,
She would probably not look very, very different in the time span of The Hobbit.
That's true. Yeah, she would. In fact, she would probably look almost exactly the same. It's just like most things. The challenge would be where to fit her in, since she doesn't feature directly in the book. So, but I mean, I'm sure they could find a way. Especially there, I think if I'm recalling correctly, I think around this time she's in fact staying with her relatives in Lothlorien, because she's like she's the granddaughter of Galadriel, and so she's staying in Lothlorien at this during the time of the story in The Hobbit takes place. She's staying in Lothlorien,
and we know that Galadriel is going to be back.
Yes, and so you know, much like we can much like it would not be unreasonable to expect Legolas to show up somewhere in Mirkwood, since his father, the king, is involved in the story. Probably wouldn't be unreasonable to imagine that Arwen is following Galadriel around wherever Galadriel's involved in the story. But on the other hand, it sounds like that's pretty unlikely if they haven't even contacted her to tell her the production started.
Exactly. And it might be a little bit expensive to put her in the movies for just probably a few seconds of screen time and then still having to pay her for it. You don't want to have too many celebrities in your movie, because otherwise, it's just a lot of money that you have to pay for something that is not essential to the story at all, or to the plot development. And then, of course, some of these actors themselves might not be too interested. If their role is has just no consequence, it's just a cameo, then it's not doing anything for their career either. This brings me to an interesting article over at the Empire Online website, at empireonline.com. They did a page on The Hobbit, Who Will Return? Your Guide to the Lord of the Rings Returning Characters. What they did is they posted pictures of all the main characters of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and for every character they have a little bit of a description of the previous role and some speculation about whether or not we might see this actor or this character return. Of course, also well aware of the fact that the overall story, the framework of The Hobbit is going to be a bit different from the book, in that it's probably going to use the flashback device, the mechanics, to kind of have Frodo telling the story and then looking back at the story of Bilbo. So about Arwen, they write, her age at the start of The Hobbit was only 2,700 years, so still pretty young for an elf. looking pretty good for someone who's over 2,000 years old. She lives in Lorien with her grandma Galadriel. She does not appear in the book, we know that. And then the odds of appearing in the film, according to Empire Online, not bad. She's still 10 years away from meeting future husband Aragorn, but she could pop up in scenes with Galadriel, stroking leaves and doing similarly elfy things. Cleaning up the forest. Who wouldn't want to play that role? So we can actually quickly go through these different characters and just see what the Empire says about it, the Empire, what the Empire magazine says about it. It starts, of course, with Frodo Baggins. Bilbo heads off on his quest 23 years before the birth of Frodo, meaning that the future ring bearer is fundamentally non-existent. He does not appear in the book. However, it's been confirmed that Frodo will turn up, not as some kind of a pre-born hobbit, non-existing hobbit, but in a flashback way, narrating the story of the quest as he reads it in the Red Book of Westmarch. This would link up nicely with the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring in the extended version, where that and which begins with Bilbo finishing scribbling the tale in that Red Book of Westmarch. And I was rewatching, as I said, the Fellowship of the Ring, the extended edition, and also, while rereading the Hobbit, it struck me how similar the beginning of the Fellowship of the Ring movie is to the beginning of the Hobbit. It uses exactly the same type of introduction to the Shire. You know, it almost could have begun with, you know, in a hobbit hole lived a hobbit, or in a hole in the ground lived a hobbit. And so,
yeah, I was thinking about this the other day too. They kind of assimilated the sort of beginning that they assimilated the kind of introduction
exactly.
that the Hobbit book has, with this sort of, you know, here's what hobbits are and here's
right.
what you need to know.
And they had to because at the time they had no idea that whether yeah. the trilogy would even be a success, let alone whether there would ever be a Hobbit movie. And probably the chances were slim, because they all knew that the Hobbit happened before The Lord of the Rings and was a children's tale and a short story. So I guess that was the reason that they just decided to take the Hobbit type of introduction and the style of the introduction and just integrate that in Lord of the Rings.
And in fact, the voiceover during those scenes is what's his name, the guy that played the Hobbit or played Bilbo, Ian Holm,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think ostensibly, I think he's actually supposedly reading from the Red Book of Westmarch, which means he's reading from The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
it'll be interesting to see how they... I guess the intro here is going to be Frodo talking, so...
I guess so, yeah. And they need to make it different. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's just going to be kind of a repeat. But the fact that Frodo is reading it... And I'm still curious about the setting. When is he reading this and where? And that also probably will determine whether or not we will see Samwise Gamgee. Played mm-hmm. by Sean Astin. Well, we've not heard anything from Sean Astin himself, whether he will be in The Hobbit. Here's what the Empire Online website says. Sam is 12 years younger than Frodo. So, again, he was a long way off existing, let alone being able to help sucker punch a dragon at the time of The Hobbit. He does not appear in the book. However, what are the odds of appearing in the film? Well, decent. If Frodo is there, then it makes sense for his friend and gardener to appear by his side, especially as Sam ends up inheriting the Red Book when Frodo sails into the West. So, if this takes place before Frodo sails off, then and this is still in the Shire, then yeah, Samwise might be there. If this is somehow taking place in a fictional setting where, I don't know, Frodo decides to sail back to the Shire for a, you know, like a reunion type of event where he reads the story to Hobbit children sitting in the grass and then with fireworks and good food. I don't know. If they make up something, then I don't know if we will see Sam. Or Samwise, I should say.
Yeah, it seems like it. I mean, I would think it would make sense. In fact, I think it would make more sense if it was, in fact, Sam reading the book, because I think Frodo, during his remaining time in Middle-earth, he was actually finishing the book, and I don't think he actually shared it with anyone until after he left and it was passed on to Sam. In fact, in my opinion, it would make more sense if it was Frodo wasn't even there and Sam was reading it to people, but, you know, they want to have Elijah Wood in it.
Absolutely.
So it makes sense that Sam be there, but I, you know, it's probably getting to the point where it's going to be really expensive to have all these Lord of the Rings people come back to do short, very short cameos where they're paying a lot of money to have them in the movie for, like, you know, a couple of minutes. So
unless, again, maybe it's just a cameo that they do for free just because they want to be part of The Hobbit. Because that will give them another 10 years for them to go do the all the conventions, the Hobbit conventions. I was in The Hobbit as well. That might be one of the reasons as well that we certainly will not see Viggo Mortensen in The Hobbit. However, we might see Aragorn. Here is what the Empire Online says. What was his age at the time of The Hobbit? Aragorn was 10 years old. He lived in Rivendell. When Aragorn was only 2, his father was killed and he was taken in by Elrond, who looked after him in the Elven Stronghold. We know that Elrond is going to be in the movie because he's part of the story. So, could he be there? Odds of appearing in the film, pretty high. though not as of, you know, Viggo Mortensen, but as a boy. Bilbo's company passes through Rivendell, both on their way to the Lonely Mountain and on their way back to the Shire. It would make sense if they stopped to pat the future king of Middle-earth on the head in a patronizing fashion. Who knows?
Oh, that's true. I'd say, actually, that's a very good point. I'd be very surprised if there wasn't some little boy in the in one of the Rivendell scenes, and then they may not even tell us on screen. They may be one of those trivia things that you find out later in the extras. Oh, that boy was Aragorn.
I think it would be very cool. It's just another way to kind of link the two movies together.
Yeah, and the one thing for sure, well, you know, I guess they could always change this, but if they're true to the book, the one thing for sure they won't do is they won't call him Aragorn on screen, because he went by another name while he was a child, because they were hiding him from Sauron. They didn't want Sauron to know that there were that the heirs of Isildur were still alive in Rivendell. And so, actually, I wonder if he was even in Rivendell at that point. Yeah, I guess he was, because his father was killed when he was two. So, but yeah, he went by the name Estelle, which is the Sindar and Elf word for hope. And so he would be, if you see somebody, in a offhand way, refer to a little boy as Estelle, that's Aragorn.
That's him. We'll keep an eye on that. Now, of course, Gimli, at the start of The Hobbit, of the story of The Hobbit, Gimli was 62 years old. However, he's not in a book. His father, Gloin, was part of the dwarf company accompanying Bilbo. However, poor Gimli was just left behind in the Misty Mountains. And so there is just no role for him in the story whatsoever. So the chances of him appearing in the film are slim. Perhaps we might hear his dad talk about him. I could imagine that. But I don't think that we will see Rhys Davies himself. I think he also confirmed that he offered his services as a dwarven consultant, but they didn't need him. So we'll just have to kind of imagine where he is at the time and what he's doing. Now, however, Orlando Bloom, that's still up in the air. We have no official confirmation yet. However, there are strong rumors that we will see Legolas in The Hobbit. Age-wise, no problem whatsoever. At the start of The Hobbit, he is, and we don't know for sure what his age is. He's somewhere between 500 years old and 3,000 years old. So that's a pretty wide range for an elf, even for an elf. So, but because he is the son of the king of Mirkwood, it could make sense that we are going to Mirkwood in the story, so he might be just, you know, hanging out in the forest somewhere. So I guess that this is, it's totally possible that he's just walking around there with the wood elves. So I don't know. I wonder if we will see him surfing down the side of a treehouse or something like that on a shield.
Yeah. I have a feeling that if he's not in the movie, if we don't see him, it will only be because they couldn't reach some kind of deal, or he wanted too much money or something. It would be so easy to write him into
Absolutely.
The story. So,
although his role is dispensable,
because
that's the difference with Galadriel. She is more important to the story, I think, because she's not in The Hobbit. In the story of The Hobbit, but there is a lot of information about her in this, what she did during that time frame of The Hobbit in the Silmarillion and in the Unfinished Tales. So I guess we know that she's in the movie. And again, this is probably part of this bigger story that is part of the Silmarillion and the Unfinished Tales that Peter Jackson has used to kind of spice up the story and make it bigger and more epic. So We don't know exactly what her age is at the start of The Hobbit. According to Tolkien scholars, she was born in, now listen to this, in the year 1362 of the Years of the Trees.
Yep.
So we have no idea when that was.
She was born in Valinor. She was born across the sea.
Exactly.
In fact, so
that's probably when time just wasn't the same time at all. I mean, that was such a existence.
That was before the sun and the moon.
Well, there you go. So we have no idea how old she is. She lives at the time of The Hobbit. She lives in the forest of Lothlorien. She lives there with Celeborn, her Ciri's husband. She's not in a book. However, Cate Blanchett has already made a deal to appear in the movies. But how? Well, according to this website, in 2941, the year that The Hobbit begins, the White Council, an alliance of good guys formed at Galadriel's behest, launched an assault on Sauron's stronghold of Dol Guldur. This storyline will likely be intertwined with Bilbo's quest, and we'd be surprised if the Lady of the Golden Wood didn't show her tresses. She may even get some combat scenes this time. That definitely sounds like something that, you know, they have to put that in a movie. That's awesome. That's a, you know, an epic assault on Sauron's stronghold. Who doesn't want to see that? And it will allow them to bring in that same, you know, these big war scenes with thousands of digital actors. And that's become so much part of the trademark, I think, of Peter Jackson's Tolkien movies, or Tolkien-based movies, that, seems like a no-brainer that this is going to be the way that she's part of the story.
Yep, I think that's highly likely. I don't know if we'll see her and Bilbo and the dwarves in the same scene at any point, but she almost certainly will be in there.
And another actor that we know for sure is going to be in the movies, that is, of course, if his health stays well, is Christopher Lee, who played Saruman. He is heading the White Council. Even though Galadriel didn't really, she already suspected something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think she was more in favor of Gandalf.
When they formed the council and they had their little, I guess they took a vote on who would be the head of the council. She nominated Gandalf and she pushed Gandalf. And Saruman won the election, I guess. And so there was always some tension between the two of them for that. And I don't know if she suspected that there was something fishy about him, or if it was simply that she just preferred Gandalf. I think it might be more of the latter, because they say throughout the Lord of the Rings that they just, you know, they never realized that Saruman had turned on them and had been corrupted and had betrayed them. But maybe she just sort of knew that Gandalf would do a better job, or that, you know, Gandalf maybe was less likely to be corrupted. But yeah, there was something about him that didn't strike her as right.
Yeah. Although you never know this is an important theme in the whole story by Tolkien, is that power corrupts. That's part of the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy underlying theme, is that, you know, these rings give you power, but that power at the same time has a corrupting effect. And so that is why this simple hobbit who has no power whatsoever and seems completely seems to be the least the worst candidate actually to be the hero becomes the hero, because it's because of his smallness and his you know, unassuming attitude, that
humility.
His humility, that he's the best person to resist this temptation of power. And Saruman was a very powerful wizard already, and just, you know, being head of the White Council and then smelling even more power around the corner, that becomes his demise and his downfall. He was already extremely old at the start of The Hobbit. He was the first of the five wizards to arrive in Middle-earth. And this happened about 2,000 years, more than 2,000 years before what we see in The Lord of the Rings. So he's been around for quite a while. He's not in the book. He's not in The Hobbit. But then again, his story could be taken from The Silmarillion and The Unfinished Tales. And there's also an Appendix B to The Lord of the Rings in which he appears. And where we get a little bit more information about what he was doing at the time of The Hobbit. So Christopher Lee's website, which I've not checked out yet, but that we might keep an eye on that for more news, states it now looks certain, providing that he is in good health, that he will be appearing in the movie. If his health does deteriorate, the part will be recast. But whatever the case, Saruman's corruption by Sauron will be part of the story. That's going to be cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's almost a bit what we see with Star Wars with the prequels, where we get to know a lot of the downfall of the characters that we see in the later three movies. And so you can never rewatch episodes 4, 5, and 6 without that pre-knowledge of, you know, who is... How this Darth Vader became this Darth Vader, and how the Emperor became the Emperor. It's going to be similar to what we see in with The Hobbit, showing us how that Saruman was actually falling. And so when Gandalf goes to consult him in The Lord of the Rings, we already will know immediately that he's visiting a bad guy. So the surprise is going to be less. Even though when you see Saruman in The Lord of the Rings, immediately you're like, this is probably not a good guy. He just looks very creepy and I don't know. Something fishy about that guy. Of course, Christopher Lee is very old. What's his age? He's like in his 80s, isn't it?
I think so. He's pretty old.
Let me check that out. Actually, what they did in... because he was also in the prequels, in Star Wars, they only used his face in most of the scenes, and they just kind of computer generated the rest of the body or used a stand-in to do all the...
I was going to say, he looked pretty spry.
Yeah. Well, if you look at the fight scene between Gandalf and Saruman, you will notice that whenever there's, you know, serious action and some serious wizard bashing there, they've got so much hair and so much beard is flying around that you can't see their faces. So
he's 88 now.
Yeah, he's born in 1922. Holy moly. So I guess that if he's fighting or anything, then they will probably use the same technique as what they did in The Lord of the Rings. Interesting. Let's see. Who else? This is quite a long list. And
skate over the hobbits.
Yeah, it's Mary Brandybuck. Certainly
won't be in it. Born yet.
Wasn't born. Pippin wasn't born. So nothing. Let's see. Elrond, of course, yes, he's there. He gives shelter to Bilbo in The Hobbit and the dwarves earlier on in the adventure. We will also see Rivendell again, so that's very cool. Mm-hmm. So Hugo Weaving has been already contracted, and I guess he still looks kind of the same.
He's probably going to have a lot of screen time. Because he'll be in Rivendell when Bilbo and the elves visit, but he should also be in all the White Council scenes as well.
So yeah.
He may have a bigger role in this than he did in the Lord of the Rings.
Could be. Now, we already talked about Arwen. Gollum, of course, he is definitely going to be in the movie.
Do you like the comment on there where when they answer the question, does he appear in the book? And they say, has young master reader read the book, Precious?
Yeah.
I think he'll be in, he was in the book, guys.
So
it'll be interesting to see if they try, like, do you think that, I mean, so we're 10 years later after they made mm-hmm. The Lord of the Rings. Will the CG for Gollum be like updated and better, or will just try to make him look the same?
Well, I mean, they will probably use the same computer models, but it's definitely going to look even more realistic because there's just so much advancement in texturing and blending CGI generated images and combining them with live footage. I think we're going to be blown away. And I think that the scenes that we see in The Fellowship of the Ring, where we get a glimpse of Gollum's cave, and we see these eyes, you know, and his fingers. That will become even more unbearable to watch because that looks so goofy and fake and definitely in need of an overhaul. So, I hope they will fix that, which will probably be another reason for me to rebuy the trilogy. Now, Boromir, Sean Bean, has already said he's not been approached. I think that would be really unlikely for him to appear. And of course, I think that officially he's not even born at the time of The Hobbit. Nope.
No, so. And in fact, and at the time that the book's being read, he would be dead. So
right, exactly.
So he has no chance, unless they do some kind of strange flashback to the Lord of the Rings type thing, which would be awful.
Yeah.
Now, that's all right, because Sean Bean's busy filming the Game of Thrones for HBO.
Okay, so. Interesting. Anyway, another big character, of course, of the Lord of the Rings trilogy is Sauron. Is he going to be back? We have no idea what his age is. He is he's really old. That's what something we know. However, he's certainly not going to be the big red flaming eye that we see in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. He is a dark sorcerer called the Necromancer. Is that correct?
Yeah, they refer throughout The Hobbit, Gandalf keeps mentioning the Necromancer in Dol Guldur in the middle of Mirkwood. And then later Tolkien sort of, you know, you might call it retcons the Necromancer and says, oh yeah, by the way, that was Sauron. When they finally go and face him, they figure out, oh, that the Necromancer is Sauron.
Right.
But throughout The Hobbit, they refer to this sort of ominous, dark power that's in Mirkwood. And the main, the sort of side storyline, which is what they're going to fill out in the film with the White Council and stuff, is this Necromancer Mirkwood spreading evil and corruption. And so they eventually decide they need to do something about him. And in particular, a couple of them, Gandalf and I think like Galadriel and Elrond, sort of have this feeling, I don't think this is just any Necromancer. We're really worried this might be Sauron. And so that's why they eventually move against him. And then that's when they figure out it is Sauron. But it'll be interesting to see what they do because, you know, they'll have to be careful, in my opinion. They'll have to be careful about how they use him because otherwise he might detract from the other storyline. Because the main villain, in a lot of ways, in The Hobbit is Smaug, the dragon.
The dragon, indeed. And if Sauron makes an appearance and he looks all menacing and horrible and with the knowledge that we already have that this is the ultimate bad guy, then, the dragon is going to be a bit underwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they might choose to portray the dragon in not as a super evil creature, but they could, you know, turn the Smaug role into something perhaps with a bit more humor, or I don't know. I keep thinking of that movie Dragonheart. Have you ever seen that one?
Yes.
With Sean Connery voicing that dragon, and for some reason I keep thinking of that type of role for Smaug, but because I think that movie was, or the story of the movie was inspired quite a bit by The Hobbit and by the character of Smaug, this very intelligent dragon with his seductive voice and just a smart, how do you say that, smart pants?
Smarty pants.
Yes. So I don't know if they choose to go for a more lighthearted approach of Smaug, then I don't think it's much of a problem if we
maybe
see
he'll
Sauron.
Be a, maybe he's just a victim of Sauron's machinations.
Oh, they might. Yeah, they might just come up with some tricksy way to. to tie his role into the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I hope not. I hope they will respect the original story and not try to tie everything together. Like that we discover that Sauron is actually Smaug's dad or something like that. But the other way around. I am your father. Oh, that would be terrible. But if he's in the movie, then we'll probably see an actor, because we've never seen his face. Of course, we've seen the eye, and then we've seen the big Sauron at the beginning of the little mythology lesson that we get at the beginning of the movie, where he's all in armor and he's got this big helmet, the dark pointy helmet on. So mm-hmm. I don't know if we will see.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what they go for on that. I hope they opt for subtle.
Yes, I would not even show him. I would just hint at, because it's more menacing and more convincing to actually not know exactly very much about Sauron. I think it usually works to the advantage of the menace if you don't see him that much. That's an old storytelling trick. You know, the less you see of the evil or the murderer or the whatever, the psychopath, mm-hmm. the more dangerous that person is, because it becomes almost a projection screen for your own fears. And so I guess if we don't see Sauron, his presence could be more menacing than if we actually see an actor like, hey, hi, Blacks, I'm Sauron. Yeah, I'm not that flaming eye yet. I haven't got the fireplace in yet. But all right, it's good to meet you guys. I'm going back to my evil machinations now. That wouldn't work. So
that's awesome. I almost hope they do that. Maybe as a special special feature on the
yeah, we could do a YouTube spoof of that. You know, what Sauron would look like.
Maybe they can get you to do it, Father.
No way. I'm not menacing. Will we see Treebeard? I don't think so.
This one's I doubt it.
Yeah. We might see some walking trees. I don't know, because the forest is alive, and so we might see a little bit of that, or a hint at Treebeard and his walking fellows. But I don't think it's likely. Tom Bombadil. Will we see Tom Bombadil?
Nah, he's over in the old forest. He's too far away.
Oh, man.
Although, who knows? They might decide to add him to the White Council.
That's the only character that I really, truly miss in the trilogy. He should have been in there.
I'm you know what, Father? I'm proud of you, because I know a lot of people who are huge fans of the book who didn't even want him to be in the movies because they
really
think he's kind of weird and useless.
He's fun, but there's so much backstory. It's such a mysterious character. We don't even know what he is.
Yeah,
and in our other podcast, we've got another series called "The Secrets of Middle Earth," where we walk in Middle Earth. We use the game Lord of the Rings Online as a kind of a sound stage for our recordings about Middle Earth. And I remember in one of the episodes in the first season that we recorded, I did a whole episode about Tom Bombadil and what we know about him, and it was just such a fascinating character, and especially because even Tolkien is kind of, you know, hush hush about it, and he doesn't want to really tell everything, so it's mysterious, but there's a lot of, I mean, it has a lot to do with the ancient history of Middle Earth and with creation, mm-hmm. and he should have been part of the trilogy, and so I'm still hoping that one way or another we can see a glimpse of him in The Hobbit, just because I want to know what he looks like.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I wonder how they would choose to portray him. You should, if you ever get a chance, you should read read Tolkien's poem, The Adventures of Tom Bombadil, which is kind of fun.
I think I did read that, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't really recall.
Battles Old Man Willow and badgers and fish, and captures his wife Goldberry, mm-hmm. the River's daughter, and so it's kind of a fun little, I mean, 'cause he basically composed that poem for his children before he ever wrote The Lord of the Rings, and then decided to incorporate him into it. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, maybe, who knows? Maybe they'll maybe they could do a little miniature feature for the a special feature for the super duper extended edition
cool.
Hobbit
that...
plus Lord of the Rings pack that comes out 15 years from now.
A bit what J.K. Rowling did with that what's the name of the book again? That backstory of the Deathly Hallows. I got the book here behind me.
The Three Brothers.
The Tales of Beedle DeBart.
Yeah.
They could do something like that with Tom Bombadil.
Yeah, they totally could.
Peter Jackson, if you're listening to this, it will make you even more money. Just go for it. It's just an extra day of work. I would just so buy that extra disc. Hint, hint. Let's go back to the news to wrap up this episode, because we've been going on for quite a while. There is a little bit of casting, not even news, but rumors about the Dwarf Kings Thror and Thryne being cast.
Yeah, this is exciting.
Apparently, this is the two Kiwi actors, Jeffrey Thomas and Mike Mizrahi. They would play the Dwarf Kings Thror and Thryne. Huh. What do we know about them?
Well, so I'm thinking this would be some kind of backstory. Thror and Thryne are Thorin's grandfather and father. They are the Thror was the original king under the mountain in Erebor, the Lonely Mountain, and he is king there when the dwarves get driven out by Smaug. And so, anyway, they are sort of the original dispossessed monarchs of the Lonely Mountain. And so Thror and Thryne and Thorin are both around when they get driven out by Smaug. And eventually they go wandering and they, you know, become sort of the homeless dwarves. Thror also has one of the seven rings
right.
that the dwarves have. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's killed by an orc. At one point, and then that starts the whole war between the dwarves and the orcs.
Yep, that's right. Well, Thror in his old age, after, you know, probably in part due to the influence of the ring, and also the, you know, just sort of grief and loss from being driven out of the Lonely Mountain, he eventually decides to go and retake Moria by himself.
Okay. And why not?
So he just sort of marches into he leaves Thryne the ring and mm-hmm. And makes him sort of leader of their people and takes his one servant and goes to Moria and gets killed. And the orcs, of course, like desecrate his body and stuff, and that ignites the whole war of the orcs and dwarves.
Sweet.
And that's where, like, Thorin gains his renown and everything. And so it's actually a very tragic story, what happens with Thror. And then same thing with Thryne. There's tragedy with him, too. He suffers under the influence of the ring. And he goes wandering around, and he actually gets captured by Sauron's forces in Mirkwood. And he gets put in the dungeons of Dol Guldur and is tortured and all that kind of stuff. And eventually, Gandalf is the one that finds him.
How do you think that they will tell this story in the movies?
I don't know. I'm wondering if this is going to be a flashback of some kind. I'm thinking
something that we saw in The Lord of the Rings as well, where you get these epic flashbacks mm-hmm. where you see a little bit of history. And it's a different style visually, and I don't know, perhaps we get the Galadriel voiceover again.
it's
interesting. I like it that if this is true, I really like it that they give us that scope and that they mm-hmm. tell us that the history of Lord of the world of Middle Earth is so old, and that the glimpse that we get of the events of The Hobbit is just a tiny little bit of the overall history and everything
that's
at play.
And these two guys' stories connect the events of The Hobbit to the larger story and to the stories of The Lord of the Rings. Thror you know, connects them to the war between the dwarves and the orcs, and yeah. also to and Moria.
Yeah.
And then also and Thrine connects them to Sauron and to the
right.
you know, to Dol Guldur, and they also there's the ring, one of the seven dwarven rings that they got from Sauron. Plays into this, and so that's what's really fascinating about all this. So we obviously probably can't expect a significant amount of material involving these guys, but I hope they do a lot, and maybe they'll film a whole bunch and then cut it down for the movie, but then add it back in the extended edition,
because who knows.
This is one of the a lot of this material comes from the appendix to The Return of the King, mm-hmm. you know, and so for me personally, this is one of the coolest, this is one of my favorite parts of that appendix, reading all this background on the dwarves and on Thorin's family. So I hope they film a whole bunch of stuff.
Brilliant. I hope so too. There's another interview with an actor that has already been cast. It's the actor that will play Bomber. That will be Stephen Hunter. Bomber, if I recall correctly, was the biggest dwarf. I mean, in terms of weight and size, right? He's a bit clumsy and always in trouble. And the actor Stephen Hunter is from Australia. Very well known over there, has been appearing in a couple of movies, but also in some funny TV commercials. You just go look it up on YouTube. You'll find some funny scenes. And so I'm not surprised that he's cast in this probably comical role of Bomber. And of course, Australia is proud because they have at least one Australian dwarf. And I looked up some information about Bomber on Wikipedia. He's, of course, one of the 12 companions of Thorin and Bilbo. Cousin of mm-hmm. Bifur and brother of Bofur. Mm-hmm. He was not descended from Durin. Poor fat Bomber is frequently shown as having been the last in everything, foolish and making mistakes. He tumbled with the... is it Bifur or Bifur? I never know.
Before. I don't know the pronunciation of that one either. I'm ashamed to admit.
Before and Bofur.
I usually just say Bifur, but yeah. Who knows?
So he tumbled onto Thorin when they enter Bag End. You know, so Thorin is one of the last dwarves to enter, and then they, you know, they all fall down. He fell into the Enchanted River after being asked to go last. Trusting neither mountain paths nor ropes to hold his weight, he chose to stay and guard the company's camp while the others moved up Erebor. However, he was forced to use the ropes to escape the rampaging dragon Smaug. Bomber slept at several key moments in the book. When he fell into the Enchanted River, he was entranced and slept for days, causing his already despairing companions to carry him. During the siege of Erebor, Bilbo used Bomber's sleepiness to his advantage, promising to take Bomber's midnight watch and allow him to sleep. As well, he was asleep when his barrel was opened at Esgaroth, and when Bilbo discovered the secret entrance to Erebor. His weight was problematic during their quest. He played a drum. This is a typical Wikipedia summary. Oh, and he also played a drum. More references necessary.
And, he's kind of he seems throughout the book, he seems to be there either to add complications to the plot or for humor.
Yeah, I think it's mostly going to be humor.
Yeah.
Oh, but most of those characters are very beloved, and they uh-huh. You need them for the story. There's an interesting tidbit of what happens to him in the era of The Lord of the Rings. Many years later, Frodo Baggins inquired after Bomber, and he learns that Bomber has grown so fat that it took six young dwarfs to lift him, as he could no longer move from his bed to his couch. So that looks like the perfect candidate for the Middle-earth version of The Biggest Loser. Who knows? The Dwarven Edition. Well, that's about it, I think, news-wise. Do you have any other news, or is this about it?
Not directly related to the movie. I'll just toss out that. Did you see that interesting article about the Hobbit Hotel?
Yeah, isn't that awesome? In Woodland Park in New Zealand. So you can, is that just a restaurant, or can you actually get a room?
I think it's a hotel. I think it's a hotel where they have all kinds of different themed rooms. So what I'm reading, it says that there's like a recycled plane suite, a reclaimed ship inn, a rail car room, and so they also added a Hobbit room.
Okay, so it's probably, I don't know, it looks nice, but it's kind of Hobbitesque, but it's definitely kind of a low quality Hobbit hole. It's way too square.
Yeah, they have walls, which is a little weird.
Yeah, and it's probably just a square building with some round windows, and then they covered it with dirt and let some grass grow on it, and that's about it. And I don't think that it will work. If you wake up in the morning in your Hobbit hole, you walk outside and you stumble onto the refurbished ship and airplane bomber. That kind of breaks the illusion of being in the Shire.
Yes.
But
somebody on our Facebook, somebody posted a link to, let's see, where is it? Somebody posted a link to another hotel in Montana called Hobbit House of Montana. That's I'm looking at it right now. I'm trying to find and see if there's pictures.
Well, this is definitely something that they can develop later on. If ever Matamata becomes this big theme park around the Hobbit, which I totally think that they should do. And they can just build a hole, you know, just dig in a skyscraper and create little Hobbit holes.
Have people
and,
who are constantly in character.
Yeah. Well, look at the success of the Harry Potter world of wizardry. I mean, I've visited that in Florida. That is amazing. I mean, it's really a place of pilgrimage for Harry Potter fans. They're going to do something similar themed around the studios in the UK also with Harry Potter. I think they should do this with Tolkien. I mean, that's such a rich world, and it's so fitting, I think, for a theme park type of environment. I think, you know, people from all over the world would flock to Matamata if they ever would create something like that. But then again, perhaps that's a bit too American. I don't know, too commercial, because Matamata is a very rural area and it's just beautiful the way it is. And perhaps you would completely spoil the landscape and, you know, the peace and quiet of that environment if you would try to turn that into some mega Disney-like attraction park.
Yeah, I think that I'm sure they will after they finish filming.
Who knows? Who knows? I think they are now involved at least they have stakes now. Or I think Peter Jackson's company has now is also kind of managing that area. There were already Shire tours which I took 2 years ago, and. But that was an independent company, and I think they teamed up with Peter Jackson somehow. But we'll get in touch with our New Zealand friends and see if we can, if they can come up with some more information about that. I totally would, if I have to stay in Matamata, I would definitely want to stay in a Hobbit hole. Why not? Then, our picks of the week. It's time to wrap up the show because we've been going on and on and on and on like we always do every week because there's just so much to talk about with The Hobbit.
One of these days we'll have to start our read-through.
Yes, definitely. Well, that's going to be an extra thing that we do.
Yeah, that's right.
I guess we can keep this series we can always put it in the feed, but... I'd rather do that, you know, just focus on the story and not combine it with the news because the news is going to be obsolete next week. Because
all right.
It won't be news.
I think that's a good idea.
The read-through, that will probably stay relevant for quite a while. So
that's true.
We're still looking for Hobbit experts and Tolkien scholars to join us in those episodes. But I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Tips of the week. My tip is, and it might be your tip as well, is actually, we're recording this on Thursday. Friday, 25th of March, is Tolkien Reading Day. It's a day that is set up to encourage people to get together and explore some of Tolkien's stories at schools, universities, and reading groups, or as a family. And the theme for this year is Tolkien's trees. It's allied with the International Year of Forests. And so you could read some chapters of The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings that feature, you know, Mirkwood or Lothlorien or the story of the Ents, and just talk about it with your kids or in school, in class. I think it's a great idea, actually, to have these themed Tolkien reading days. And then, of course, if you're not in the school or part of a university, you can always, you know, take some time off and read some Tolkien yourself, which you are probably doing if you're listening to this podcast. So that would be my tip of the day. It's probably already past when you're listening to this, but yeah, Tolkien Reading Day. Put it in your calendar for next year. Do you have a tip for today?
Yes, I'm going to touch on the that I was looking at that Hobbit House of Montana thing. That's a pretty cool little thing. So first I want to give a thanks to our fan Lorley Harbig, who posted this on our Facebook page. But go to hobbithouseofmontana.com and check out that website. I guess it's like one house. It's not a hotel. It's like one house that you can stay in. It's $300 a night, but it's a little hokey and kind of goofy a little bit, but actually seems very appropriate for the Hobbit. But it's kind of a funny little thing. So if you're ever up in that neck of the woods, you should go stay there for a day or two.
$300
a night. Go check out the URL at least, hobbithouseofmontana.com.
You might want to find yourself a treasure in a mountain first before you sign up. That's pretty expensive. Hey, we want to refer people to our Facebook page, as we already mentioned, Secrets of the Hobbit. Just type it in the search window in Facebook and click on that like button so that your friends and family also know that that page exists. It's also a great place to give feedback on our show. You can also go to our main website, sqpn.com, which is where you will find links to many of our other shows as well. As I said, we also have a show called The Secrets of Middle Earth. We've recorded our first season, and we're in pre-production of our second season, which will continue our travels through Middle Earth, through the landscape created in the Lord of the Rings online game, which I'm also playing, by the way. And we even have a special kinship on the what's the name of the server again? Now I forgot.
Was it Elendomir?
Elendomir, something like that. Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll include a link on the in the show notes as well. To the server where we have our kinship. Elendilmir, that's the name of the server. It's an American server, and there are also a lot of people from Australia and New Zealand playing on that particular server. The game is free, by the way. You can download it for free, play it for free, and then it uses micropayments in order to make some money. It's a lot of fun. And you even if you just play the free stages, just walking around in Middle Earth, it's the most stunning thing ever. It's a beautiful game. The name of the kinship is Elenath Ephedin. Elenath Ephedin. But just send us an email if you are playing on that server, and we'll hook you up with the rest of the kinship. You can reach us, Tolkien@sqpn.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. That was SQPN. No, what is it? Hobbit SQPN? Is that the Twitter name?
SQPN Hobbit.
Yeah, and then the other one is Tolkien. SQPN
Tolkien. SQPN Tolkien.
Okay, so SQPN Tolkien and SQPN Hobbit on Twitter, and that's also where we post messages, news, links to both our website and to our Facebook page. And if we are recording this live, actually, so there's also a chat room and a live stream. So if you want to know when we are recording this and you want to join us, keep an eye on that, on those two Twitter feeds. Well, that wraps up for today. Again, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for all your feedback and support and enthusiasm. Again, we welcome our new listeners. We hope you enjoyed this as well. Let us know what you think. Write us a review on iTunes. Let us know via email if you have any suggestions or tips. We are always happy to receive your feedback. Dave, I will see you next week. Thanks for joining me today. And, well, until next week, I should say, stay safe.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.